Hello, this is Irene Bullard. I'll be reading the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Tuesday, August the 8th. On the front page, there is a large photograph with two high school football players in a blur, and it says, "Football practice kicks off." Central Catholic assistant football coach Nick Chiodo watches a sprinting drill practice Monday. Football practice has begun for Illinois High School Association member schools. And then another photo underneath it shows a U-High assistant football coach Mike Troll pointing and with his mouth open directing the players during practice Monday. Now to articles. Normal approves hikes for sewer fees. Average household to see bill more than double over 5 years. Normal officials know residents will be hurt by sewer bills doubling over the next 5 years, but they're convinced it's better than the alternative. Without this, we would just be doing triage on the system and figuring out how we're going to pay for it, said City Council member Jeff Fritzen. Massive dollars and a lot of disruption in neighborhoods is what we'd like to avoid, agreed City Manager Mark Peterson. Nobody likes to pay increased fees, but in the long run, by taking this approach, we're going to avoid huge long-term costs. That may be cold comfort to the average normal household, which will see its sewer bill jump from about $10 now to about $22 by April 2023, under a plan approved by the council Monday. Mayor Chris Coos and Council Member Scott Preston did not attend the meeting and thus did not vote on the plan. The hikes, starting in October and repeating each April, will raise $1 million this fiscal year and $1.2 million each of the following four to address sewer maintenance, plus money to build a balance in the sewer fund that will enable the town to respond to future maintenance needs. The town has never had a similar plan, but it isn't because of neglect, said Fritzen. It's because of new technology for monitoring systems and a shift in sewer maintenance toward prevention rather than repairs, said Scott DeSplinter, an engineer with consultant Crawford, Murphy & Tilley. Peterson said the town will review the fee structure annually during its budget process. That could help the officials cope with additional costs discovered as town staff and a to-be-hired consultant clean and record video of the system, an expensive process that's barely begun. If we encounter some need that we didn't expect, and it was significant, we could always go back and say we need to change our assumptions. But I really don't think you'll see any change in 5 years, he said. After 5 years, then I think it's an annual evaluation. Two frequent critics of town spending, Mark Tiritilli and Ron Ulmer, objected more to the structure of the increases than the content. Ulmer questioned increasing both a per-gallon fee and a per-user fee because users may reduce consumption in response, throwing off the revenue estimates. Peterson agreed a per-user fee hike would be more fiscally stable, but said the town wants to place more of the burden on heavy water users like businesses than households that use little water but suffer equally under a per-user fee hike. That single person in a house, in some cases, some of our retirees and people on fixed incomes, it hits them a little harder, he said, of a per-user increase. Tiritilli questioned why the town needs to increase fees so much when neighboring communities, including Bloomington, have similar rates to Normal's current sewer fee structure. The city has discussed increases. Everybody's in the same boat where they are having to look at this, said Public Works Director Wayne Aldrich. Tiritilli also suggested the town consider using outside employees for new work on the plan. Officials plan to hire two staffers at $60,000 per year each. Contract employees don't come cheap, responded Fritzen. The familiarity and consistency internal employees are going to bring is a positive. Peterson to retire, but won't check out. No cruise control for normal city manager. Mark Peterson thinks his best work as normal city manager could lie ahead. My most satisfying accomplishment might be yet to come. Who knows? He told the Pantograph. I told everybody at the staff meeting this morning. Business as usual. Don't think I'm going on cruise control. For the first time, however, the finish line is in sight after the town announced Monday that Peterson will retire at the end of March. For Peterson, 58, it's a chance to relax and do things I've been putting off while giving the town fresh leadership after nearly two decades at the helm. First, along Mayor Kent Carriker, and now with Mayor Chris Coos. I liken it to a professional athlete. Best to go out when you're still contributing rather than wearing out. You're welcome, Peterson said. I'm ready to look to the future. For Coos and the normal city council, that means picking Peterson's successor. That process starts Friday morning with an executive session. While it is hard to imagine the town without Mark Peterson as city manager, Coos said in a statement, we are very fortunate that he is allowing us the better part of 8 months to carefully consider our next steps. Council member Jeff Fritzen said that process is likely to be mostly private, as the town often handles personnel matters. When asked about Pam Reese, who is now assistant city manager, the role Peterson held before taking the top job, Fritzen demurred. All viable candidates who display an interest in the job will get an opportunity to express that and contact us. And that's something Pam will have to decide, he said. She's obviously a very capable administrator and has worked well in our system. Reese could not be reached for comment on Monday. Peterson will retire with 30 years of service to the town. He helped shape Uptown Normal alongside Coos, as well as the expansion of Constitution Trail and redevelopment of the shops at College Hills. Fritzen also mentioned upgrading park facilities, spurring economic development, improving the town's relationship with Illinois State University, and maintaining a good employee culture among Peterson's accomplishments. A good city manager is one who will keep day-to-day operations in order, but an outstanding city manager is going to go beyond that and see the potential in things and challenge the council to look at things normally they might not, said Fritzen. It's not easy, but Mark makes it look easy. Before coming to Normal in 1988, Peterson, a University of Iowa graduate, worked in Ankeny, Iowa, Coralville, Iowa, and Liberty, Missouri, where he was assistant city administrator. His town salary is $189,405. Peterson also served on several local commissions and boards, including the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, Central Illinois Regional Broadband Network, Connect Transit, and McLean County Regional Planning Commission Executive Committee. While Peterson plans to stay in the Twin Cities after retiring, he plans to leave those boards and stay out of his successor's way. There may be some professional opportunities, I don't know, and I'm not prepared to talk about them, he said. Peterson also wants to spend time with his wife, Becky, and their sons Adam and Tanner, and their first granddaughter, 1 year old, Elise. I highly recommend Grant Parenthood, he said with a laugh. I also have horses, and I don't get to spend much time with them. They might be the ones most disappointed by my retirement. They're going to get worked hard. Peterson hopes to also maybe enjoy some of these great things that I've been involved in creating. There's a lot on our plate, he said of the town. I expect to get a lot of things done in 8 months. In Beeman appeal, court rules in favor of ex-officers. Lawyers for Alan Beeman will ask the Illinois Supreme Court to review an appellate court ruling in favor of the town of Normal and three former police officers accused of conspiring to frame Beeman on murder charges that were later dismissed against him. Alan Beeman suffered a terrible injustice. He spent his youth in prison for a crime he manifestly did not commit. We plan to ask the Illinois Supreme Court to review the decision, David Shapiro, one of Beeman's lawyers, said on Monday. Thomas DeCiani, one of the lawyers for the town and its former officer, said, "On behalf of the officers sued in this case, we are very pleased that the appellate court agreed with our position. We hope this is the end of the litigation for all involved." Beeman was exonerated in 2008 of murder charges in connection with the strangling death of his former girlfriend, Jennifer Lockmiller, whose body was found in her apartment near Illinois State University in August 1993. Beeman was convicted 2 years later and served about 13 years of a 50-year sentence before the Illinois Supreme Court reversed the conviction based on what the court found to be tenuous evidence against the Illinois Wesleyan University graduate. Beeman, now married with two children and living in Rockford, also was given a certificate of innocence and pardoned by former Governor Pat Quinn. So far, efforts by Beeman's Chicago legal team to bring Beeman's accusations of malicious prosecution to court have been unsuccessful at both the federal and the state court level. Several civil lawsuits filed since his release have been rejected in rulings that favor the town and the three former officers, McLean County and former prosecutors James Sook and Charles Reynard, who both went on to serve as judges, were dropped from the federal lawsuits filed by Beeman. Friday's ruling by the 4th District Appellate Court leaves in place a ruling by 6th Judicial Circuit Judge Richard Brock Jr. to dismiss the lawsuit against Normal and now retired officers Tim Friesmeier, Dave Warner, and Frank Zayas. Beeman alleged the officers failed to adequately consider evidence against another potential suspect, instead focusing all of their attention on Beeman. The appellate court found no evidence that the three investigating officers pressured or tried to influence Sook and Reynard's decision to prosecute Beeman. The court also rejected the most serious allegation made by Beeman's lawyers against Friesmeier, including that he lied to a grand jury and provided prosecutors with false information from two time trials he performed to show how long it may have taken Beeman to travel from Rockford to Lockmiller's apartment. As to Warner, the court concurred that Beeman's claims were insufficient to support an accusation that the former officer deliberately withheld inconclusive polygraph results from a second suspect. Daily Digest. Mosquito pool tests positive. A mosquito pool near Bloomington in the 61705 zip code has tested positive for West Nile virus, an indication that the disease is in McLean County, the County Health Department reported Monday. McLean County residents should reduce their risk of getting bit by an infected mosquito by wearing insect repellent containing DEET when outdoors, repairing torn window screens, and eliminating stagnant water outside. While most people who get West Nile experience mild symptoms including a slight fever and headache, severe infections can cause paralysis and death. So far this year, two people in Illinois have tested positive for West Nile. BN Club sets open house. The Bloomington Normal Central Illinois Radio Society Model Airplane Club will be celebrating 2017 National Model Aviation Day with an open house Saturday at its airfield. The field, located 2 miles northwest of Funk's Grove on Illinois 36, will be open to visitors from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. SIRS was founded in 1964. Members of the club, who will be available to answer questions, show off their models, and give advice about the hobby of model aviation. There also will be flight demonstrations, model rocket launches, displays of model aircraft, and more. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, August 8th, the 220th day of 2017. There are 145 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 8, 1974, President Richard Nixon, facing damaging new revelations in the Watergate scandal, announced that he would resign the following day. On this date in 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte set sail for St. Helena to spend the remainder of his days in exile. In 1911, President William Howard Taft signed a measure raising the number of U.S. representatives from 391 to 433, effective with the next Congress, with a proviso to add two more when New Mexico and Arizona became states. In 1937, during the Second Sino-Japanese War, Japan completed its occupation of Beijing. In 1942, during World War II, six Nazi saboteurs who were captured after landing in the U.S. were executed in Washington, D.C. Two others who cooperated with authorities were spared. Thought for today: the time to relax is when you don't have time for it. Written by Sidney J. Harris, American journalist, 1917 to 1986. Today's Flick Fact. Question: the storied Castle Theater in downtown Bloomington is enjoying a nice resurgence these days as a concert venue instead of a movie theater. Nearly 30 years ago, the balcony of the castle became known across America for something else. Do you know what that is? And the answer is: Bloomington native son McLean Stevenson often used Bloomington as a source of humor in his comedy routines and lines on the MASH epic TV series. In 1989, while appearing on The Tonight Show, Stevenson announced that back in his teen years in Bloomington, for romance, he would take girlfriends up into the castle balcony. That's also where, once, according to Stevenson, after visiting the theater's concession area, he went back up to the balcony and, while nibbling at a girlfriend's ear, accidentally then lost a milk dud in her ear. Johnny Carson, host of the show, howled in laughter. Fire victim ID'd. Officials probe cause. Officials investigate normal blaze at Hunt Drive condominiums. The McLean County Coroner's Office on Monday identified the woman killed in an early Sunday morning fire in Normal. Coroner Kathy Davis said the woman is Diana McLaren Osborne, 68. Preliminary autopsy findings indicate she died from probable carbon monoxide intoxication due to inhaling smoke and soot caused by the fire that was reported just after midnight, said Davis. Toxicology results are pending. The cause of the blaze at 1538 Hunt Drive that heavily damaged McLaren Osborne's condominium unit remains under investigation by the coroner's office and the Normal Fire Department. The investigators are still working their way through and certainly want to be as thorough as possible, said Normal Fire Department spokesman Matt Swaney. We just don't have anything new to report as of yet. A damage estimate has not been released. Signs were posted on three neighboring units that the building was unsafe for living. The Red Cross is assisting those who were displaced. Checker Cab in Bloomington has been designated as a drop-off point to help assist those who lost belongings in the fire. The fire was reported by neighbors who saw smoke. Residents of the other units in the four-unit, two-story building were able to get out. As firefighters entered the building, they discovered heavy smoke and fire inside one of the units, where they found McLaren Osborne unresponsive on the kitchen floor. Despite all efforts of the firefighters and the paramedics, the victim was unable to be resuscitated and was pronounced dead at the scene. An FD said on Sunday she was pronounced dead at 1:09 a.m. After the victim was removed from the condo, the roof collapsed, said NFD, and firefighters were forced to fight the fire from the outside. The blaze took about 1 hour, 15 minutes to bring under control, said the department. Firefighters were able to rescue a dog from a second unit and a cat from a third. The fire appears to have originated in the woman's unit and spread to the roof above it and to the adjacent units. There was heavy fire, smoke, and water damage to the first unit and moderate water and smoke damage to two other units. Peterson Legacy, not limited to Uptown. Mark Peterson's fingerprints are all over the Twin Cities, whether it's transforming downtown Normal to Uptown Normal, partnering with others on economic development, or solidifying town-gown relations, community leaders said. Peterson announced Monday that he will retire in March after 30 years with the town of Normal, including the past 20 years as city manager. He has been instrumental in the town of Normal's growth and success in the area of development, said Kyle Hamm, CEO of the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council, that includes Peterson as a board member. His expertise in understanding economic development will be missed. Mark has been a pillar in our community for so many years, added David Taylor, president of United Way of McLean County. Whether running our 2009 United Way campaign or his work in helping with the amazing transformation of downtown Normal to Uptown over the last 20 years, he's left a legacy on this community, Taylor said. Illinois State University President Larry Dietz described Peterson as the consummate professional and someone who has always been approachable and creative, adding he has played an important part in the great relationship between the town and university. The most recent major collaboration between Normal and ISU involved a land swap to provide a site for the new Normal Fire Department headquarters that is near completion on Main Street. Heartland Community College President Rob Widmer commended Peterson's leadership. As a college, our first significant interactions with Mark occurred when we started making plans in the late 90s for our permanent campus. It has been a pleasure working with him ever since, Widmer said. Among joint projects between Heartland and Normal was the Corn Crib Stadium, for which the town put up $1.5 million toward parking facilities, to be repaid through a portion of the parking fee. He always had the best interest of the community foremost on his mind, and his support has helped us advance various initiatives for the betterment of our district, Widmer said. Unit 5 School Superintendent Mark Daniels said Peterson's efforts have helped build a tremendous relationship with Unit 5. Colleen Canaday, president of Advocate Broman Medical Center in Normal, said, I have greatly enjoyed working with Mark over the years, both in hospital town endeavors and in our partnership with BN Advantage. He has truly been a visionary city manager for the town of Normal, and I appreciate his leadership and all that he has done for our community. Long-term solutions sought for inmate, mentally ill man to leave McLean County Jail, move to shelter. A mentally ill inmate will be released from the McLean County Jail today with a one-day bus ticket to Springfield and orders to stay there while his state-appointed guardian and defense team put together a long-term solution to address his homelessness and mental health care. Judge Casey Costigan told Lafayette Banks that his 76-day jail stay will end, but how long the 50-year-old defendant remains free will be determined by how well he follows the judge's strict conditions. Banks must live in the Helping Hands shelter and comply with terms of his probation for a 2015 conviction for impersonating a police officer in McLean County. He also must cooperate with mental health treatment. I don't want to put you back downstairs because that's not doing anybody any good, said Costigan, referring to the jail below the fourth floor courtroom. After the ruling, the logistics of releasing Bank became apparent to the judge and three lawyers working on the case. Where would the homeless man stay if he was let out of jail Monday night, and who would take him to Springfield? The two questions were resolved with one more night in jail and a train ticket. Left unsettled was how Banks, who was unable to rationally engage in a dialogue with the judge, will get from the train station to the shelter. Before the hearing, Banks' situation was discussed in an informal courtroom meeting between lawyers, including Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt, defense lawyer Jonathan McEldowney, and David West, lawyer for the Office of State Guardian, appointed to represent Banks' interests. Fitt's reluctance to dismiss the probation violation against Banks was met with an equal amount of skepticism from the State Guardian that Banks would attend required check-ins with his probation officer in Bloomington. A suggestion from Fitt that Banks be evaluated again to determine his mental fitness drew an unenthusiastic response from McEldowney. 9 months and $15,000 later, we will be back where we started, said the defense lawyer. West told Costigan that most cases handled by the State Guardian involve people who reside in a supervised facility. Before his arrest, Banks left the Jacksonville nursing home where he had been placed, said West. The Springfield shelter that offers social services is the best we've got today as an option for Banks, said West. Banks will be allowed to come and go from the facility that will serve as a permanent address for disability benefits, something Banks has not yet received. If Banks remains on probation, McLean County court officials should work to find local housing for him, West suggested. Costigan set an October 3rd hearing to review the status of the case. There is a photograph of several men walking, and underneath it says, USDA Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, center, walks with Growmark representatives. Rick Nelson left and Jim Spradlin during a tour of the Evergreen FS plant in Chenoa on Monday. Perdue visits Special Thrill. Ag Secretary stops in Chenoa, says next farm bill a priority. It was USDA Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue who was asking the questions Monday afternoon as he met several central Illinois farmers on a five-state tour of the Midwest. During a stop at the Evergreen FS plant, Perdue was introduced to Stanley Weeks, a 90-year-old farmer from the Chenoa area. How long have you been digging in the dirt with your hands? Perdue asked. Weeks answered that he remembers farming back in the days where horses did most of the work and not tractors. Still, it was Weeks who walked away impressed. It's a real honor to meet him, Weeks said. That's a real thrill. He's a real friendly man. Weeks was one of about 75 farmers on hand in Chenoa as part of Perdue's Back to Our Roots recreational vehicle tour. He made several stops in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa, and today he will visit Indiana. We have ridden the roads, and as a Georgia boy, I am a little jealous the way these corn and beans look out there, he said. Perdue said one of his main projects this year will be to work with Congress on the next five-year farm bill that will set the direction for agriculture policies and food programs. The legislation is expected to be voted on in 2018. I like principle-centered legislation, he said. The principle of a farm bill that I would advise Congress to pass is a balanced approach where farmers are given the freedom to farm, but not farming for programs. Give us a safety net for what they do as far as crop insurance, but let them farm for the market and let them base their decisions on where they see the direction of the markets going and let them do what they do well. Perdue was nominated for the post by Donald Trump shortly after the November election and said that he and the administration will continue to work hard on agriculture and trade matters. We have beef back into China for the first time in 13 years, and we signed a rice protocol in the last few weeks, he said. I think China wants a relationship, but it makes it somewhat difficult with some of the other unfair trading practices they are using. Those of us in agriculture fear that sometimes agriculture products are used in retaliatory measures, but everyone in the administration understands not to use agriculture as a sacrificial lamb. after the tour of the Evergreen FS plant, Purdue said, "It's an impressive facility and we're happy to be here. I'm an old grain guy and I look at this facility and around the area and see great means for corn and bean production. I hope the yield turns out to be as good as they looked today." We're going to take a short break and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.